RTI.
Welcome back to part two of Postcard from Poprad Boys and Girls. This week produced by Lee Banks. I'm Eric Wiltshire. Over in Paris, it's Mark Gander.
Oh, hi there.
Mark is the one of the two founders of the Consumer Action Group. Lee Banks is an esteemed, so he tells me, and he's going to give me the £5 later, journalist.
I am.
Very glamorous.
Actually, a writer. A journalist. I'm a writer. There is integrity to writing.
Is that cheaper on the car insurance as well?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it is actually, yeah. Yeah, because like I said before, this is the truth.
Yeah,
it's very difficult to get insurance as a journalist cheaply because you are considered to be alcoholic.
If a cap fits, wear it, as they say.
I'll drink to that.
This one's headed up for Eric, so I'll let Lee start it then.
Well, yeah, it's, I just thought this was really interesting, and with an edge of controversy, if we wish to go down that route, considering the story about Damien Hirst's skull, further down the list. But the pioneering EDSAC computer, which is the first, and Eric, you can correct me on this if I'm wrong, was the first computer built, and I think it was in the 1940s, is now being rebuilt at Bletchley Park for posterity. I think that's incredible.
Well, there was a bit of a bun fight as to claims as who got there first, as always with these. It's a bit like the mobile phone argument, whereas one group says they were first and another group says they were first. It's safe to say it was one of the unbelievably innovative things of the 40s, and
that's so early, is it? But quite seriously, wasn't it in the 40s where the first sort of incarnation of the internet came about as well?
Not really, no. The trouble with all this sort of stuff is when you look at these devices, they're actually old-fashioned electromechanical relays that we used as opposed to solid-state transistor stuff. And whilst I'm happy to say, yes, it was a kind of embryonic computer. The power of it was so pale that with mechanical components, you were never going to get, you'd need 10 Pantechnicons to sort of cart your PC around on it.
It was like the original mobile phones, wasn't it? You needed a wheelbarrow to carry the battery.
I remember those very well.
But I do. Oh, virus database has been updated. There was some noise there, sorry. I think the danger is with a lot of this stuff, and I'm going to go off tangent a little bit here, because something that made me really sad many years ago. And it was in the days when, I'm trying to think, it must be good 25 years ago, when I actually took my radio hams examination. So I can do me, hello, is that Tokyo, and all that sort of stuff. Got a license, passed me City and Guilds for that. And in those days, down at the Shefford Radio Society, if you passed your radio hams exams, you were taken round to see Claude, who'd had a license since
his name wasn't Balls, was it?
No, but he'd had a radio experimenter's license since the mid-30s. You know, he was one of the pioneers of radio. And he could build spark transmitters and all sorts of old wonderful stuff. And point of the story is this. I said to this guy, because you had to go round there once you got your bit of paper. It was a sort of process that you went through. And I said to this guy, Claude, I said, you really should write all this stuff down and put it in a book. Otherwise, it's going to get lost to history, you know. And nobody will ever see all the amazing things that you did. Unfortunately, the man died many, many years ago. Nothing was ever done. The whole thing was just smashed up to bits and thrown away.
What I think is terrible, yeah.
Yeah, and it's nice to see that Bletchley Park are doing things to enable the youngsters to actually see what it was like before MP3 players and laptops and notebooks and netbooks and every other flipping book, because it was a bit of a different life then, wasn't it?
Well, of course it was, but is it worth £250,000? And Mark, I hope he answers this in a way I want him to answer it, because we could shoot him out of the water as well on this. Is it worth £250,000, Eric?
I think it depends on how many people are going to see it. If only one person sees it, then for £250,000, I don't think it's worth it. But if we happen to get maybe sort of 3 or 4 or 5, how long is it going to be on available? I suppose it's going to be available forever. It may well then pay its corner very well.
If it
provides itself as a piece of good education for children, and if it inspires them, then it's not a bad thing. But I have to say that to hear about this kind of money being spent when we are all in the middle of all these catastrophes around, we're in the middle of this economic crisis and so forth, in a way one sort of thinks, well, you know, hang on a minute, what are we doing? But I suppose, of course, you know, life has to go on as well.
Of course it does, and you've got to actually see. You ruined that, Mark. He was supposed to answer that question, and he was supposed to get himself in trouble over that, because I was going to say, all right, if it's worth spending £250,000 on a computer, a knackered old computer from the 1940s, why, Eric, is it not worth spending £100,000 or £200,000 on a work of art by Damien Hirst?
But Damien Hirst has never done any art.
Ah, that's just a cop-out!
He's never done any art at all. He's just had shares in a formaldehyde company. I actually agree with Mark. If it was going to be one of those closed-shop displays, then I couldn't see the justification to it. But if you're going to get schools, colleges, and there's going to be some education involved in this project as well, which I think there will be, knowing how Bletchley Park is being structured. And I have to say at this point, boys and girls, I have a vested interest, because I suppose the biggest influences on my tech knowledge came from Bletchley Park, because that's where I was taught.
I know, that's right. That's why I thought it would be interesting to let you talk about. I didn't know you were going to go on.
It's been a long week, boys and girls. It's been a long week. Now we're into something that these two are going to love, I'm sure.
I'm not going to love it. Why? What is it?
Well, it's Michel Roux.
Oh,
yes.
That's right. Yeah.
Go on.
Well, all right. Just ask a simple question. Why being serviced by a Brit is so useless?
Who says?
I have to say, I'm mystified at that as well, because I don't tend to find that customer service in Britain is so bad. There are two things about customer service in Britain. First of all, I think it's better than they're suggesting in this recent report. The second thing is that I think that there is, generally speaking, great access to complain. And I have to say, I live in France, where I can say that the level of service in restaurants is a byword for everything that's just sloppy, bad will, impolite.
Oh, I'm liking this.
So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, if you want to complain about it, they think you're nuts. And at the end, they think it's just because you're an Anglo-Saxon, because the French accept it.
I'm going with Mark on this one, because it's like a couple of weeks ago over here.
Yeah, but hang on, let's be sensible about this. How can you both, living in different countries, and you've been out there for a substantial period, how can you say that this is wrong, that service in Britain is fine? It isn't. Service in Britain is rotten.
Well, to start with, the studies written or started.
Well, a French man.
And just tell me, isn't roux the word for something you make with flour and water?
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Yeah, a bit sloppy like the rest of France.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
So that I rest my case then, really. But I think
this is the Michelin starred guide, isn't it? This is what they say that the service.
No, excuse me. Get it right, Michelin.
Michelin.
Yeah, because don't forget, it's not proper English.
I just thought you got a speech impediment.
But isn't this a case, though, where you've got, and no disrespects to Michel Roux for a minute, he's got one way of doing stuff.
Are you sure he's an E?
Yes, it's not the other version. He's going to England, which has its way of doing stuff, and if you stick a Slovak in England, they're going to say, well, that's a bit different, isn't it?
Because it's different. Service in Slovakia is wonderful.
Well, I tend to agree with that. But the cultural way it's done is going to be different for a French guy to a Slovak guy to an English guy and anywhere else on the planet. So what one person can consider bad service could actually be incredibly good. And I'll take you to the point of, you know, the sort of cultural things around the world where in a certain part of the world, if you're drinking alcohol, it's politically correct to turn your back on each other, have a quick slurp of your whiskey, then turn back again.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's all it is, only because you don't want to buy a round.
and it's like, you know, in some parts of the world, it's very acceptable to get burp at the end of a meal, when it's not in other parts of the world. It's
That's
cultural
right.
differences.
Yes, but there is a point to the fact that service in Britain is surly, arrogant, uncaring, not particularly clean, and not very helpful.
Is that in French restaurants?
Well, yes, maybe it's in the French restaurants in London. Yeah. I have to say that whenever I get back to London, it may be bad in London, but I have to say how refreshingly good it is to experience the service in London after what I have to put up with in Paris, really. And I think, let me say that I visited the BBC website looking at this this particular report a couple of days ago, and there were comments for a huge number of people, and one absolutely constant characteristic all the way through was, first of all, people saying that they didn't really think it's true. But the second thing is that the name, the word that kept on coming up all the time as the byword, as the measure for showing what bad stuff is really about, was France all the time. All the time.
Well, France,
it's a national, it's an international byword for poor service.
So you're telling me this is just a red herring, isn't it?
It's not a red herring.
Yeah,
it's a simple fact. You know, do you know why?
He doesn't serve red herrings, actually. Right,
well, he should be. Should be doing he should be doing sustainable fishing.
that was a little porpoise just swam past me.
Yeah, which reminds me.
There's a reason, right, that service is so bad in Britain. Mm. One reason. Well, this isn't the only reason, really.
Yeah, it's because all the waiters are French.
No, we're all big-headed, and we all think that we're too good to go into service. And there's one reason we all think we're too good to go into service, because we are paid, I'm not in service, actually, but if I was in service, I would be paid the minimum wage, which is you're barely able to live on, but I would also be expected to police the rest of my community over their age as far as drinking is concerned, whether they can buy glue off us, or anything. And in restaurants, like Mark says, you know, they think you're an idiot if you complain in Paris about it. They certainly think you're an idiot over here if you complain about service or food. In fact, so bad, they want to fight you.
Well, I have to say, I do agree that I think it is very poorly paid. And I think that's another reason why I'm always surprised that people seem to be so comparatively decent in English restaurants. And a journalist called Emma Kirby, who wrote a very interesting article on the BBC website a couple of years ago about French service, said that one of the problems is that in France there's a huge ambiguity that causes the problem. And the ambiguity is that when you go into a French restaurant, the waiter calls you sir, and you call the waiter sir.
Cochon.
Monsieur, monsieur. And they said that's the problem, because actually you don't really get any good sort of demarcation of roles, and that explains poor customer service in French restaurants.
Yeah, absolutely. I know how to go with that. Actually, can I just completely break the script for a minute?
Yes.
Thank you. Because something really wound me up this week. Really, really wound me up, and this has just reminded me of it. I don't know if anybody's seen these reports going around about discard fish. Have you seen that story?
The ones that are being ate by all the birds because they've been found dead.
No. Oh. This is the story. Let's pretend that we collectively have a fishing boat now, and it has.
We could park it on our beach.
Yes, we could. It's got EU quotas, all right? So you're allowed to catch so much pollock, so much cod, so much this, so much that. Now, once you've got your quota of cod, you obviously can't go fishing for cod. But the trouble is that in the sea, when you put a fishing net down, it's indiscriminate what you catch. So you run out of quota for cod, but you can still bring in and sell pollock, for example. Yep. When your fishing net goes down in the water, it collects cod as well as pollock.
So you could say that this is your codpiece and you're talking pollock.
I knew that was coming. But serious for a minute. Now, ready? Are you get ready for this? Under EU law, you can collect the pollock from your fishing net, but the dead cod that are in your fishing net, which are absolutely, they are thrown. Hundreds of tons of perfectly edible food is thrown back in the sea because of some EU fishing rule.
Well, what can you say? Aren't the people who run this world so clever?
And what I would say, boys and girls, is I understand there's a pan-European project being put together to actually lobby...
Wait, fry your cod.
No, to actually lobby the EU to change the fishing policies. So if you do come across it, just think about how many tons of food are thrown away and wasted. We've mentioned this from supermarkets on the programme before and many other places. Poor guys who have to earn a living out with a fishing boat are being forced to throw fish overboard, which could be ate by people with not so much money.
It'd be interesting to find out, wouldn't it, how much food is actually thrown away, whether it's supermarkets, restaurants, fishermen, farmers, whoever. Find out how much is thrown away, because when you think...
Hundreds of tons.
I bet it's more than hundreds of tons, mate. I bet it's millions of tons.
Yeah, probably.
If you think the price of food now is almost getting to the point where people are starting to starve. You know that everybody buys everything that's got little stickers on it now, reduced prices and things like, because we can't afford to eat properly in Britain anymore.
No, it's not a bad thing, actually, because all these sticker malarkey of years ago, you should buy that food, because there's nothing wrong with it. Moving along, he says, Cliff Richard to record with the Jackson 5.
Yeah.
Isn't it the Jackson 4 now?
Well, that's what I was thinking.
I think he's a bit perverted, like he's 70 and he thinks he's going to become the new Michael Jackson.
Oh, is that what he's taking the place of Michael Jackson?
That's what it appears to be.
Well, he's a bit of a Peter Pan character, isn't he, Sir Cliff Richard?
That's right. And he might have his own monkey. You don't know, do you? But to actually start recording with the Jackson 4, isn't that a bit weird?
I don't know. I'm just thinking. I'm now a record producer, thinking of the popularity of Sir Cliff with the Jackson 5. Yeah, I'm into a few million.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was the point I was making. It's just cynical. Absolutely cynical and a bit perverted.
No, I don't know if I don't think I'd buy into it, but there again, I've got to respect Sir Cliff for looking as damned horribly fit as he does at 70 years old.
Can we talk about age?
If you want.
No, just a quick point. I just thought it was interesting, because I was thinking very very much about age this week. And
You would, actually.
I'm just going to put the cat amongst the pigeons here, because there is one of us, right?
Yes.
One of us on this show, yes. Right?
I know where this is leading. I know where this is going. Anybody who wants to go in my betting book right now, I know where this is going.
There is one of us lies about their age. I don't like... I openly admit I'm 43. Well, Eric, all you got to do... to be honest, Mark, Eric is a bit older than he looks. Just count the rings round his neck, I tell you. He's in his 70s.
Yes. Right. Well, I mean, wasn't it recently... we ought to take the example of the BBC and say, well, we need to freshen up those wrinkles.
Yes.
That's it. But the thing is, this is the point I wanted to make. It's only a small point. Is the fact that, like, I don't actually feel my age. I feel like I'm about 15. What about you?
Yes, it's always been like that, I have to say. There's certainly an 18-year-old or a 25-year-old screaming to get out. Probably an 18-year-old, actually.
Yeah, the only thing that bugs me is as a teenager in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm. You're getting very faint, Eric, there.
Sorry.
It's fading away.
Fading away, yes. Yeah. As a teenager in the 1960s, I fought against the BBC Light programme, which was so light it could have floated away. It was rubbish. It was the most appalling programme on the planet. And so we fought to get new music on there, to get, in those days, the Beatles and Bob Dylan, and stuff like that played on the radio via offshore radio stations because it was for the young minded, and something new. Then you hit 50-ish and you used to get going, oh, well, it was better then because you had the Beatles and Bob Dylan. And I'm going, get a life.
Well, that's right. I agree. See, the point
excuse
I was
me.
Trying to make...
Excuse me, you agree with that?
I agree. No, I agree with the point you're making, that looking back, it's you look back to your youthdom, don't you? Yeah, because I feel, right, quite genuinely, all right, I'll go with Mark, I'm 17 or 18. That's how I feel inside, right?
When you said you were 15 a minute ago, you're not even old enough to do it.
It was Eric, he just went on and on and on again, didn't he? I've aged, I've just aged because of Eric. I'm trying to get to the punchline.
Right.
This is a serious point. I now have a vast knowledge, decades and decades of knowledge that I've gathered.
Yeah.
But because I feel so young, I just think of being precocious. That was all he was. He was a joke.
We'll just wait for the movies from years ago where that little tumbleweed rolls in front of the screen. Oh, I can't do any more now. I've lost it completely.
I don't want to do this global warming one.
No, I don't. But you know what? I'm gonna say this. It really winds me up when you see these people who are sort of plus 50 bemoaning the music of today, criticising the youth for wanting to hear that music, and then wondering why they look at them and go, you stupid old person. Because that's exactly what we were like in the 60s.
But Eric, I have to hold my hands up here. I wasn't a teenager in the 60s.
Well, no, because you were already voting.
Yeah, I was probably older.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't a teenager in the 60s. I was in I was still at primary school. Oh, that one that follows primary school.
Because they kept you back so often.
Yeah. He never passed. He didn't graduate.
To a radio, so he didn't let me go.
Oh, dear.
The only person in primary school in long trousers, shaving.
Oh, no, you stand out in the crowd, though.
Yeah. let's try and get some sanity back into this. No, it's not going to work. How busybodies can beat global warming? Oh, no.
I said we weren't going to do that one.
Why? Well, I know it's boring.
I threw it away because I said we weren't going to do it.
Oh, well, we won't do it then.
Body heat is energy, and I mean, I want to say, what's wrong with that? Huge cuddle, lots of body heat. Wow, fantastic.
Yeah, but this company's actually harnessing it and using it to heat the building. I think that's really good. I think that's the way for the future.
Well, there's a hotel up in Scandinavia.
I don't need all that equipment. I know a good way to harness body heat. Blimey, I don't need all that.
Yeah.
A sexual dynamo.
Yeah, but isn't there a hotel up there in Scandinavia where if you go on a bicycle...
Rest in the middle, then.
Shush, minute.
What did you say? A dynamo?
Just a minute.
Dynamo hum. Where's that dynamo coming from?
Very good.
That'll be disgusting.
But seriously, there's a hotel up in Scandinavia where you can get a discount if you ride on one of those exercise bikes, which then pumps energy back into the hotel. If you ride on the bike, you get a discount for your room. What's wrong with that?
I've heard of that as well.
Yes.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
That's why I said, let's not do it, because it's rubbish. And you wanted to do it, and now you're blaming me.
Oh, dear.
Criminal corner.
Oh, dear. You're not going to do flu, are you?
Flu?
Yeah, we got a story about avian flu in Romania. Bearing in mind, everybody around here in Slovakia has got flu at the minute.
Oh, well, I've had it, haven't I? No, I think, no, I've had that avian flu, but except mine was a cow. No, it wasn't. What have I had? I had pig flu, didn't I?
You are anyway. So bizarre. So what's all this about birds that were thought to have died from avian flu in Romania instead apparently drank themselves to death?
Yeah, they felt that rough because they got avian flu. Mm. They sat there and they drank themselves to death.
Huh?
What were they drinking?
What were they drinking?
Alcohol.
Vodka?
No, they ate loads and loads of Marc grapes. You see, Marc, just be careful. Which are you?
It's pronounced Marc.
See? Again, the
do the dog with the air lip.
No, let's just keep correcting this journalist. It's lovely. How do you? It's written as MARC. How do you pronounce it, Mark?
What, my name or grape?
The grape. Mar.
The mar. Which means the leftover.
Great. Yeah, you are the leftover of grapes.
Marvellous. So basically, these birds were eating these grapes.
Yeah, and they got absolutely paralytic and died. That's not funny.
Oh, dear.
So, seen in Chicago, on Chicago's lakefront. This is what I thought you were talking about, where Canada geese and mallard ducks are eating millions and millions of gizzard shads. They're fish.
Right, I was going to ask, what on earth is a gizzard shad?
I've never heard of it.
Ask Max Mosley. Right.
And by the way, if you're listening to this at home and you can actually follow it, would you please email studio@rti.fm and explain what the heck is going on? Because I can't understand a word of it.
Yeah, but anyway, because all these fish were dying, again, it's another one of those incredible mysteries which is happening all across the world, right, where animals are dying. They're even dying in Britain. I forgot what it is now, but the Thanet Coast, right?
Oh, well, Thanet is very famous for its crabs.
Yeah, well, all the crabs are blinking well dead, and they've all been washed up on the beach. So all around the world, animals are dying in mysterious circumstances, and it can't be put down to alcoholism.
Hey? How the heck do you get there?
Because of my genius razor-sharp mind. That's
so you're telling me people are pouring gallons of alcohol in the sea in England, and the crabs are dying of it?
They aren't dying of alcoholism. The avian birds died of alcoholism because they ate all the marks.
Right. There is a logic to this, isn't there? Please tell me there's a logic to this, because I can't see it.
It's a mystery. Nobody knows why all the animals around the world are dying.
No, that was a 1980s song, The Mystery.
I mean, it is quite amazing, because we've got all these human catastrophes caused by weather, and we've got all these animal catastrophes with birds dropping out of the sky in the States, in Sweden, in UK there, and fish and crabs dying. I mean, it's just amazing.
It is a bit, actually.
And that's why. What is actually going on? Nobody's actually investigating this. They just say, well, those birds got drunk. All the crabs on the Thanet Coast have died, and the birds are eating them. So, ecologically, it's all working out perfectly fine, but there is a reason behind it. It's been muted that it's UFOs. It's been muted that it's death rays by the American scientists. It's all sorts of things. It's bizarre.
It is. And that's so bizarre, we've run out of time as well, boys and girls. That was Postcard from Pop Bread for the 14th, remember this, the 14th of January 2011, where Mark and Lee agreed on something.
No, we didn't.
No, we did not.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Say goodbye, girls.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.